For January 29th, 2016, we talk about the possibility of Her Story 2, The Magic Circle, and we interview the lead developer of Phoenix Feria. Welcome to Level 136. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games and also people whose voices crack because they've been talking too much this week.
I think that's like three episodes in a row that we've messed up the intro in some way.
They didn't hear that last time. I edited that one out because I was too embarrassed. Yeah.
Now they do.
I told you when I flubbed it, I was like, you know what? I can't do this 2 weeks in a row.
I remember that now, yes.
Yeah.
We have standards here.
Now you can imagine what happened last week.
Yes. Sorry to put you on breeze.
it's fine. Oh man, I don't know. Like, there's not enough a lot to bring up in terms of weird banter. Anybody have any anecdotes over the past week?
Yeah, we're so warmed up from doing the interview that it's just like.
We don't want to break the illusion. We don't want to tell them that we record stuff out of order so we don't bring guests on.
We say it every episode that we do that?
Maybe. I don't know.
I think we should actually do the segments out of order in order to make it even more confusing. Oh, yeah, and make more work for Cole.
Like that.
Every
like
week's
that,
like Memento.
Like that one episode of Laverne and Shirley or Seinfeld. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, but we won't put it out of order in the order that we recorded it. We'll do another order. Mm-hmm. So I believe we are obligated to start with the grind first. I digress.
See, if I wasn't so worried about there being sensitive information in some of those, and you know, just in the things we say in between sections and such, I would actually just take as part of a backer blog, say, hey, at the at the end of a recording session for The Level or any of our shows, really, here's like just the raw, all of it at one go, no edits, no anything.
That'd be interesting. Have you done that with any of the other shows?
No, I haven't done that. Like I've done edit tours, but it's always either sped up as I'm doing the edits. Oh, I did one for The Level as I was editing in real time, but never in a way that people could listen to. I mean, like, it'd just be garbage. Like, hey, listen to this garbage in order to see, like, it might be more enlightening to see what I do cut out, just instead of deleting everything, drag it to the end of the track and just have it be just this cavalcade. Like it would just be us warming up for about 15 minutes and then like, yeah. Yeah. Too bad. Can't be a title. I don't know how we would how we would romanize that. But
as part of the Galaxy of Heroes game that I talked about last week, there is a sand person in it that is like a boss character, and its name is just U's and R's and apostrophes. So
it's the Lovecraft approach.
Nice.
Am I the only one? I'm sorry, I'm about to tangent. That like whenever I drink like elderflower, like soda or something, feels like this should be some sort of like Lovecraftian drink.
No, I think that. Are you talking about? You're not just drinking the elderflower liqueur, are you? Because like the bottle that comes in is pretty goofy. It's got a weird shape, but like I would think like drinking elderflower cordial or whatever would be more like Redwall.
Well, true.
Oh, elder, like eldritch. I gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking more Redwall.
I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
Been a long time. It's like my childhood.
Yeah. I imagine, you know what I think we would find if we went back to a Redwall? A lot of racism. Like, oh, wait, the badgers are totally an allegory for something. Womp, womp. So we have a bit of a show for you. We're going to do a little bit of a brief, and I'm probably going to usher us along through that. But we've got as kind of the main portion here, we are joined by Eduardo Ramirez, the developer of Phoenix Feria, Rage.
Say it right.
Yeah.
Say it the good way.
Seriously. You lean into that in the interview too, don't you?
Yeah, I might gush a little bit. I have to say thank you to I think it was Phil Holmes who pointed out on Twitter that this game existed, and kind of like required by fate that I set up this interview. So
yeah, it's like something you found your game doppelganger, your doppelganger.
Nice.
And then after that, that interview with that developer, Eduardo, that developer, we've got our usual grind section. But yeah, let's get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Does anybody want to go first?
I got a brief.
Go for it, man. Brief for the better.
It's a brief meta brief, but Sony is having an Everyday Heroes contest, which is a contest that happens in the Life is Strange video game. And so it's just a photo contest to submit a photo of what is a quote-unquote everyday hero, and so it's open to interpretation. So it's kind of interesting to see an event that's in the game be play out in real life. But whoever wins it wins a cash prize of $10,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So is it like a screenshot contest, or how does this articulate?
It says it's just a photo contest that focuses on ordinary people doing extraordinary things. So I think it's photography. I think it's open to interpretation what medium of photography, but so perhaps screenshots could do. But at least in the game, they do it mostly through Polaroids or other forms of photography, like more current.
Wait, when does this game take place?
In current times. They just do it because Polaroids are cool, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a hipster thing. Photography. Yeah. No, it's a hipster thing to take pictures of Polaroid, like with instant film.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't understand how Life is Strange is involved if it's a photography contest.
So that's a contest that's within the game because the main character is in photography school.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, so they named the contest after the contest that the character in the game?
Yes. Like, this is literally the same contest that is in the game that she's trying to do.
Okay, there we go. So it's like it's a themed photography contest that is meant to play into the Life is... Okay, there we go. Sorry if I'm being dense. I just wanted to make sure.
Life is Strange is now an ARG.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's cool. You saying that game is like 20 hours long really scared me off of jumping into it. Aww. Oh, well. No, but that's pretty cool. I have a brief one as well, and this is more of just like a historical notes kind of thing. It's been confirmed in a huge Huffington Post article that Michael Jackson was involved with the soundtrack of Sonic 3 and Knuckles. So this has been a very poorly kept secret / kind of urban legend, mostly borne out by rumors and magazine articles at the time, and also like a lot of similarities between different tracks in the game and different Michael Jackson tracks. And it came out that because of two reasons, his name was taken off of it. The first reason being Michael Jackson was not happy with the compressed audio. So they made these kind of like lush, rich compositions. And then in order to fit those onto a cart and feed those through the Genesis sound chip, they had to really compress them. He was like, yeah, this isn't really my music anymore, so I'm just going to dip. And then that was right around the same time that some of the first, or at least the most high profile, sexual assault and molestation charges came out. So Sega was like, you know what, this is probably pretty good. But yes, not all the tracks were altered substantially, and so we can put this to rest, you know, 23 years later, that Michael Jackson was involved in Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
That's pretty cool.
I can rest easy at night now.
Yeah, no, just pacing the walls, man.
I'm more impressed that you were pacing on walls. I mean, I know. That's an achievement.
That's how topsy-turvy things were in my mind, David. Okay?
I had
that sounds bad.
Pictures in red string strung up everywhere.
Yeah, it's my wall full of crazy.
See, I never got that. Like, like what is the deal with, like, the string and, you know, like, connecting, like, newspaper? Like, what is the string accomplish?
So... I'm sure there's a root in fact, like maybe that did happen. I'm also pretty sure that it is, you know, kind of entered into the realm of like, this is visual shorthand for this is a person who is either mentally unsound or obsessed.
Sure.
What it really is the kind of red string that you need for that diagram, and you can only get at Costco in like a 64 pack. Mm. And so you go, you're just like, I need a little diagram. And then you're like, well, I've got all the strings, so I might as well go apeshit with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it winds up everywhere because what else are you going to do with it?
Yeah. It's a hot dogs and buns problem.
Yes. Yeah. Pictures of my obsession, red string. I just can't get it to match up.
Yeah. You know, so I wanted to make a jaunty kite string for my son, and that led right away to trying to connect the Bilderberg group with the Bilderberg group.
Well, you know, they are responsible for the fact that hot dogs and buns come in different, you know, different quantities.
And what's with bun size hot dogs? Why don't they make hot dog size buns? But yes. I digress. But yeah, you know, we can all rest easy. David, what's the story you brought to the mix?
Sure. Speaking of the build of, okay, now I can't pronounce that, so I can't do that joke. Donald Rumsfeld has released a game. It's a mobile game called Churchill Solitaire. So apparently Winston Churchill created a version of Solitaire that is just unreasonably difficult and complex. Huh. So it's played with two... complete decks of cards. I believe instead of having like what one row of cards, you have 10.
Holy shit.
Oh boy.
And it's like the top row of cards, you can't move freely, like you can only move in certain situations. And apparently the end result is the game's just very, very difficult. And apparently whereas Solitaire is you know, to a significant degree, kind of a mechanical path. Apparently, this is much more like any move you make will, you know, very directly, you know, keep you from making other moves you would have wanted to make and those sorts of things. So apparently, it draws in a lot more of a lot more strategy.
Interesting. So, like Solitaire, especially if you're playing like Vegas style, is highly dependent on just the order in which you draw cards.
Right.
And so I'm curious if this is harder just in that you have to draw more perfectly, or if there is a heightened element of skill to it.
See, I mean, I haven't seen anything that's just like straight up laid out the rules of it in any of the things I've read. Apparently, partially because it is very complicated, but they all seem to emphasize at least the idea that it's very strategic. So,
nice.
The other interesting thing is, you know, some of the story behind this is rather interesting because apparently, you know, Churchill created this game and then, you know, like taught it to like one or two of his friends, who then, you know, taught it to just like, you know, a handful of their friends, one of which being Rumsfeld. And so at this point, literally like, you know, 10, 20, 30 people in the entire world knew how to play this game.
Huh. But before this game was published.
Right, before it was published. So there's a certain degree to some of the motivation of this was actually kind of a pseudo historical thing.
I was just kind of like, hey, you know, here's this weird thing that was born of a fascinating man's obsession. So we want to make sure that this doesn't die with all the people who we taught it to.
Right. Exactly.
Huh.
Exactly. The other thing I've got to say about this story is I feel like, particularly if, I feel like it's, you need to do yourself a favor and read some of, like, the interviews and articles on this, just because, like, Rumsfeld's commentary on it is just adorable. Like, just the degree to which he is obviously just thrilled to be doing this. Like, just like the there's like sentences where he's just explaining how like amazing it is that like this is the first time in history where it would be possible for someone to play this sort of game on like a mobile device. And like stuff like that. Like,
does he ever say tighten up the graphics on level 3?
Well, no, and that's the I think my favorite part is apparently, you know, he, you know, has no coding ability, stuff like that. So and you know, being used to you know, the way things work running the Pentagon, he managed the product, apparently actually had a very direct hand in managing it, but predominantly via sending out just hundreds of memos. I really love the I want to quote from the Wall Street Journal's story. They say, as a result, Churchill Solitaire is likely the only video game developed by an 83-year-old man using a dictaphone to record memos for the programmers.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's... I don't know, just all the way around, it's kind of a fascinating, you know, process, you know, just kind of a fascinating artifact. Mm-hmm. And most of the things I've, you know, heard about this seem to be pretty positive about the actual gameplay.
Nice.
Huh. Well, I imagine, like a lot of tabletop or card games, having a computerized version just helps you get into it even faster, especially yeah. with how bug nuts crazy this sounds like it is.
Yeah, yeah. They actually talked a lot about, you know, spending a lot of time, you know, trying to make it accessible.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, the pay to play or freemium element of it mm-hmm. is paying for hints, which I think is kind of funny.
You want to feel like a real bitch?
I love the way they somehow manage to like nail, like, on the one hand making the freemium entirely harmless, mm-hmm. but on the other hand still making it pay to win.
pay to win faster,
right? Well, you know,
I'm curious. Go ahead.
I think it's good that the front man's an 83-year-old because it's like, oh, I'll give him a tip, no problem. Like, he needs well, this.
No, he does.
I know he doesn't, but you know what I mean?
You know what? My personal opinions of Donald Rumsfeld have nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, no, just you're definitely right though, Ben, like just playing in like, oh, he's super enthusiastic about preserving this, again, this very obscure aspect of Winston Churchill's life. So like, yeah, you know what? It doesn't matter.
It's a cool thing.
Yeah, no, this is I will admit I wrote off this story when I saw it because I was like, huh, well, that's weird. But yeah, thank you for bringing this to us, David.
I read the headline that an 83-year-old made an app, and I was like, oh, that's cool. That's really cool. But I had no idea it was Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah. Huh. Let's see here. And then, Dennis, what's your story?
Yeah, I'll round us out with a story that her story is getting a spiritual successor. So it's confirmed by Sam Barlow, who's the guy who designed the first game, mm-hmm. that he is working on a second game.
It's called History.
It's called Her Story 2 right now, which is confusing because there's actually no direct connection to Her Story.
Her Story 2, Story Harder.
Yeah. Electric Boogaloo. But yeah, so this is great to hear. I mean, this is, if you haven't played this game, you absolutely should. It's delightful and completely refreshing. In a year that has a lot of delightful and refreshing games, this one stands out. So it's good to see that this one succeeded well enough that he's working on a second one. It's going to be FMV style, mm-hmm. just like Her Story was, and kind of hew close to a lot of the things that people liked about the first game, even mm-hmm. though it's not going to share any story beats.
Yeah, I kind of wonder like if he's going to reach this economy of scale, because I have to imagine there are a bunch of like problems about how to make problems that are inherent with making this kind of game that he solved, that mm-hmm. now he can actually like take a better second crack at it.
Like the how to dole out the information is now almost algorithmic.
I mean, not like algorithmic, but just like figuring out how to structure it. Like, I'm sure that, you know, so this has to be something where he laid out the script entirely in a flowchart.
Oh, sure.
Like just all of that process that goes into, you know, writing the entire script and then filming this and putting it together. Like, it just kind of seems like this is a really smart thing to do, especially because the hook was so the hook was so catchy, which is a really dumb thing to say, but it's all I can think to say.
I always wondered why more companies didn't, or companies, developers, whatever, you know, didn't do that. Like, especially when you have a game that's kind of, you know, stands on its own. You know, isn't like a Call of Duty where it's, you know, bigger is better.
Yeah.
But, you know, something like this where, you know, you don't need to, you know, you don't need to innovate, no. But you know what I'm saying.
I mean, to an extent, that's what, like, Telltale does on the good side.
That's true.
Or
that's,
you know,
like Spike Chunksoft.
Yeah, like with the visual novel kind of stuff, Danganronpa, you know, things like that. Or like when this goes bad, it turns into like, okay, well, we spent all this money making Final Fantasy 13. What can we do with this that'll just like make any kind of money? Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you're right, Cole, that there has to be a very unique vocabulary that goes with designing a game like this, just in terms of how to structure and make everything fit, that is not easy to replicate. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see, now that the word's out and Her Story was such a success, if the acting names associated with the game go up in recognizability.
I don't know. Like, I really liked that actress. I kind of liked that
awesome.
I liked that I didn't know who she was. Like, if this was Ellen Page sitting there to be like, huh? Like, I kind of know you from movies.
I'm Ellen Page from movies.
You know, from movies.
Damn you, Page, I read your book.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is something just from a being able to immerse yourself piece that it was nice to have a relative unknown. But just, yeah, I would be, if I was in that profession, I would be banging down Sam's door to participate just because this is so unique and cool.
Yeah.
And because, damn it, this is a project where the camera is going to be on me for 100% of the time.
It's the me show.
Yeah.
Phoenix Furia 2. It'll just be all videos of you, Dennis.
I am available. I'm happy to book that.
All right, I'll make sure that I'll forward any correspondence your way.
Yeah. Oh, so speaking of, just random aside, I'm actually doing some voiceover work for the new job.
Oh, nice.
And I'm learning that however happy or excited you think you sound, you need to ratchet that up by about a factor of 10 for it to translate the way you want it to.
Oh no, you totally have to smile when you talk, and you have to be up on the balls of your feet.
Yeah, no, like you have to, like, exactly that, physically. Yeah. Like, get into it, because I did what I thought was really solid, and then I played it back and I'm like, I sound like I'm about to fall asleep, my god.
Yeah, and you have to not be afraid to use your hands when you talk.
Just,
you know, even if it's an audio performance, that's really going to come through, this this emphasis that you're putting into it.
It's kind of frustrating not being able to hit your hands against anything, though, if you're gesturing.
Cole, I imagine that the gesture you're making while that is just the masturbating in the air gesture.
I'm definitely doing a cheesier version of the voice. But no, yeah, it's super rewarding work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Now yeah. Cole's just flicking off the microphones when he talks.
Okay. Oh, not flicking the microphone, flicking off. I totally misunderstood you.
A subtle difference there.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Or not so subtle difference. But yeah, so that's my story, is that we're gonna get more Her Story-esque games in the future, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Now it is time for the bonus round, where Dennis has so kindly arranged another developer interview like we talked about at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, this is Eduardo Ramirez, who is the founder and CEO and sole actual game developer programmer guy at Green Lava Studios. And they're working on a game that was called Phoenix Rage, but got an amazing makeover to be called Phoenix Furia.
Just inspired. Yeah. So we're going to cut to that audio. We'll be back afterwards to talk about what we have been playing. I will put a disclaimer here. There are a couple of crackles in the audio that I tried to edit out, but, you know, some of them are probably going to sneak through. But it is not going to be too distracting. If you hear it, no, it's only going to last for like a second or more. So, Dennis.
So we are very fortunate to be joined at this recording session by Eduardo Ramirez, who is the founder and CEO of Green Lava Games. Eduardo, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Well, thank you for having me here. And thank you for interesting in our games.
Yeah. No, a couple of the hosts were able to actually play and have some fun with the game, and we'll get into that. But Phoenix Furia is quite the game and a lot of fun. Tell us a little bit about where you're calling from, where you're located.
Well, I'm calling from Costa Rica. We're located in the main city, so I'm from the city, which is kind of almost like a joke.
Very cool. And what's the game development scene like in Costa Rica? Is there a lot of development going on, or is there much of a scene, or are you kind of the gaming scene out there?
Well, there are a few people making games. They're starting to make teams. In our case, we're one of the first making this kind of approach on international market. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're starting. There's no much of a industry here. Sure. The companies in Costa Rica still think that like, making a game will cost like $500, something like that.
Oh.
Okay. It's a different scenario here.
Nice. So what inspired you to start a gaming studio, and what was that like?
Well, that was, 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, that was because I made this game about butterflies, which you make the life cycle of a butterfly, and you win the game by mating, and yeah, then having sex with another butterfly. That's kind of that was like something that I really enjoyed, and then I push over this. On studying more about game development, and that's the start of the studio.
Was it hard getting other people to join up with you, or were other people interested in doing it as well?
With my team, Diego, the art guy, he was a classmate in my high school, so we were actually friends. And the music composer, he is actually my brother-in-law. So,
nice.
Yeah, yes. He didn't have any choice. So,
so did Diego? Did he do both the pixel art in the actual gameplay as well as the more illustrations in like the cutscenes?
Diego made all the assets, the pixel art.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
On gameplay wise, I made all the gameplay.
I am the
game designer, and Diego made the storyboards. So,
oh, okay,
yeah. Actually, in the game, everything is it's not a video file. It's something we program in an engine. So it feels like cool. Cinematics, but it's not.
Interesting.
What language did you program in?
The game is made in Game Maker Studio. Mm-hmm. So it's with the scripting language GameMaker has in the engine. Okay. So it's not, that's something easy to learn, but it's just code.
Yeah. It's still a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah. That's impressive. Yeah,
my greatest accomplishment, that was Pong. So I think this is a little bit more advanced.
That's really impressive. Kind of coaxing kind of the smoothness and kind of just the sheer number of things happening. You know, it's been a while since I checked in, but even like the split screen multiplayer that's happening that I see, like I can't wrap my head around how to get that out of Game Maker. Cause like David, I just have such limited experience with it.
Oh yeah. I have been working with the Game Maker since 2010. So yeah, I have some experience with that. And I discovered the split screen, that you can make several views in Game Maker last year. So a year ago, actually. Then I was like, yeah, I could try to make a two-player mode. And you know, it's done.
Yeah, congratulations on that. Yeah. And is that specifically for PlayStation 4?
It's for console, for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Okay.
For now, yeah. We're still deciding on what will happen with this mode on, mm-hmm. on console and PC.
So can you kind of give me the elevator pitch, just kind of the short summary of what Phoenix Furia is about and kind of what kind of game it is, just for our listeners who may not be up to speed on it.
So you want me to make the pitch? that's so hard for me because it's a fast-paced game platformer with unlimited jumping, unlimited dash, and cookies. That's it.
Especially cookies.
Yes.
Without cookies, the whole thing falls apart.
I don't know if you saw what we made with cookies.
Yeah, we kind of joked when we were playing it that we described it as being like Flappy Meat Boy because some of the movement reminds of Flappy Boy, but we tended to have like 50 plus deaths per level, just like Meat Boy.
It looks like it plays a little bit like a bullet hell platformer, if that makes any sense.
It's a Flappy platformer. That's what I can say. Yeah. But yeah, it was heavily inspired in Super Meat Boy, so that's mm-hmm. the reason some people are comparing the game directly to that game, and it's natural, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Were there any other games that you took inspiration from, or were there any games that you intentionally tried to be not like?
I can say that. We inspired on, you know, this TV show from the 90s called SWAT Cats?
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so the art style, if you see T-Bone Smile, mm-hmm. you will see a Phoenix Smile. So some sort of
point.
Yeah. So we wanted to have that kind of style or feel. So yeah, it's not a game, but it's a... It's another source of inspiration.
So speaking of the feel, we talk a lot on this show about the feel of jumping in a platformer or the feel of movement in a game. Can you talk about how much you tweaked the movement and the way it felt as you were developing the game? Or was it kind of set from the start?
It has a long story, actually. There's this game called Phoenix Box.
Okay.
In Google Play, it's like a prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn a lot from that game. We made the unlimited jumping, and with that prototype, we spent like just 2 months working on how the dash feels and how the collision box feels. So that
that's a lot of tweaking.
Yeah, it took us a lot of time. And still, after launch on Steam, we made more tweaks because we got real data and feedback from the players. So, yeah, it's important to say that the console version will have even a more polished game feel.
What sort of things have you been working on for the console version in terms of the feel?
We changed a lot of levels
mm-hmm.
Because we spent a lot of time seeing people playing the game in YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe 25% of the levels were completely changed.
Mm.
And also the collide box also changed. It will be little bit more smaller.
Yeah,
that's actually something I noticed a little bit. Is there were occasional times, not real often, but occasional times where it seemed like I kind of brushed something. And yeah, Yeah, that, mm-hmm. that makes sense.
That's really cool to hear that you are kind of using kind of post-launch YouTube footage and kind of streamers and stuff like that to kind of tweak as almost as testers, you know, beyond where it goes. Like, do you have a particular process for that? Like, is that something that you guys kind of actively study? Like, how do you seek out kind of the good, the good plays?
Well, like a process for testing, we have one. We go to random places in Costa Rica. We install the game. We don't tell anybody that they will be playing the game because we tell them, like, yeah, if you play this, you won't have to pay for the computer. I mean, for not the computer. I mean,
for, just take it. Wow.
It's a real good deal.
For the minutes they will be playing a random game in a, you know, it's this internet places. I don't know if you have those.
Oh, things. Sure.
Yeah.
Cafe. Yeah. That's exactly like that. So we got the honest opinion from strangers, and that's good. Now that we have YouTube, we can do something that we cannot do on live testing. Mm-hmm. And that's looking at the player's face when they're playing.
Oh, wow.
Because we can see reactions on how they are, think about the game, and if they're happy, if they are having some much struggles, passing a specific level. So
that's really cool. That's really clever. So the game seems really prone to speed running. Just like there's a lot of ability to perfect your movement in a level and go faster. Did you design with speedrunners specifically in mind at all?
Yes, I wanted to. First, to make this game for speedrunners, and I designed some stuff, but the speedrunners made some runs that it was unexpected, and that was really, really cool because they found some flaws, not flaws, like really, really
edge cases,
shortcuts, nice shortcuts that I didn't design them.
Wow, just stuff that you didn't take into account. So they're out there breaking your game for you.
Yeah. And that's very nice too.
No, that's that's great. I mean, so like how much do you find yourself at all kind of catering to that crowd, like people who just really want to, you know, pump the difficulty as much as possible?
Yeah. Once I saw this guy playing the game, passing the game in 37 minutes.
And wow. I cannot
do that.
I can't level in 37 minutes.
Well, the thing is that I'm not able to do that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I try, but I cannot do that. So
it's your own damn game.
Yeah. I thought I was going to be the best, but I'm not.
You have to add a cheat for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really, really fun about the game, and you mentioned it earlier, is there are actual cookie recipes in this game as you progress through the levels.
Which is
super fun. And I haven't gotten a chance to actually try them yet, but I'm excited to. Where did the idea for that even come from?
I still don't remember. It was like a joke. and then it came up a true thing. And the cool thing is that Diego's sister, she's a pastry chef.
Oh, okay.
So the cookies are unique for this game.
Oh, nice.
All of them. So,
huh. So this...
that's a cool thing for a cool feature of the game. It's like unique cookie recipes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really ups the replay value.
I know. It's better to have a cookie than a virtual achievement.
I agree. Yeah, very true.
That's really cool.
We have some questions from fans that I'd love to get your thoughts on, listeners of this show. One of the questions comes from Ollie, and he asked, was easy mode on the console version based on feedback from the fans, and was there any resistance from hardcore fans to making the game easier?
It was something that came from the fans. They were asking, like, they were, some people were saying that it was too hard. So mm-hmm. the balance was to make an easy mode where you will get one hit, but you cannot make speed runs with that in that mode. So the hardcore players will keep the same thing. We're not giving something for free. And also with the cookies, now if you play with in easy mode, you are not able to get golden cookies. And that's only for the original mode, rage mode.
It actually gives you vegetable recipes.
What? Vegetables?
Like carrots and broccoli and... Tomatoes.
Instead, instead of cookies, you get, you know, health food, you know? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, like a soup or something like that.
Yeah. Although that could be tasty. You never know.
you know.
Yeah. We had Eric ask if there was any story behind why the second character in the console version of the game is undead.
It's there's a story, but we don't want to reveal it yet. But yeah, there's something about undead. It's kind of cool.
We agree.
Yeah.
We're big fans of skeletons.
Yes. Pro skeleton show.
Yeah.
Did you know that you were going to do a console version when you did the original version of the game?
Well, no. To be honest, this is our first time on consoles.
Mm-hmm.
And when Sony and Microsoft approached us, we were shocked because our goal was to be on Steam, sure. and that's it. And now we have a new goal. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and actually we were very excited about that.
And how has it been porting from PC to console? Has that been difficult or easy?
Straightforward in some cases, but sometimes I get stuck. That's just me. You know, I'm the only programmer, so it's only work on me. It's been very straightforward.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just seems so crazy to get a call out of the blue or an email out of the blue from these publishers or from the console holders, like both of them saying, hey, we want your game on our system. Like, I don't know, like maybe I just have an old idea of what the publishing environment is on, you know, consoles, but like that totally seems like a big deal.
Yeah, but they actually... said that line. We want your game in our console. So. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
We're very happy.
I would be totally remiss if I didn't at least ask about it, because with the change to consoles comes a serious upgrade to the name of the game. I just want to congratulate you on finding an absolutely an amazing name. I think Fury is top notch.
Thank you.
But what's the story behind the name change?
Well, we received a random cease and desist letter.
Oh, no.
Yeah, from a big corporation in the U.S., so in a game industry, so that was the reason. And since if we go to battle, you know, with against that company, I'm pretty sure I will go out of funds. And also, it will take me forever because it was made with the Costa Rican law. They got a law firm here in Costa Rica. They're so big, so they made that. And if I go to court, it could take me years to solve this. So we wanted to just move forward with this and take the shot.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. I think that's probably a good decision to stick around to fight another day, at least in terms of developing another game. But that's terrible that you just kind of got steamrolled. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Huh.
As kind of a final question, we always talk about what we've been playing on the show. So what games have you been playing recently, and are there any that you would recommend to listeners?
Okay, so I'm playing with my girlfriend this game called Slender the Arrival. I'm not sure if that was a mistake or not. And it is pretty. It's pretty scary. I don't know you guys if you have played that game. But
yes, I have.
You should. Yeah, if you want to have a bad time with nightmares for a week, then you should play that game.
Did did you go all the way and play it with the sound up and with the lights down?
Yeah, that was my biggest mistake.
do you play a lot of scary games?
Silent Hill. I love Silent Hill and yep. Resident Evil. But yeah, that was my young me, like mm-hmm. 7 years ago. Now playing that, it's different. I don't know.
Do you do a lot of couch co-op with your girlfriend?
Yeah, there's this game called Lovers in a Dangerous Spacetime.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're manning a spaceship.
That's an excellent game for playing with a girlfriend.
I remember seeing that. It's on. I think it's only on PC. It might be on Mac now. I don't know.
It's an Xbox One.
Oh well, there. That's why I haven't played it. Yeah.
I remember I met, I believe it's called the guy Jamie. Yeah. I met this guy on E3 2014. He was in front of my stand, so I knew that game from E3, and then I can recommend that game.
Yeah, that's available on Mac and Linux as well.
Oh, sweet! Oh.
Yeah,
that makes me very happy.
Yeah, Dennis and his wife, they play a lot of co-op games. That's why we're very curious about this.
Oh yeah. So we do all the Rayman games, and we're currently working our way through Diablo 3, which is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I haven't played that yet. Someday I will.
it's good. It's nice because it's a longer game. A lot of co-op games tend to be short, unfortunately. So Diablo is one that you can really sink your teeth into.
Oh, really? Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. This was a lot of fun, and it was great to learn a bit more about Phoenix Furia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you for all this interview and spreading the word about our work.
Yeah. When does the game come out on consoles?
Soon.
we'll include Excellent. A link to the website so people can check it out.
Yeah. All right. That's cool. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Talk to you later.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing. Let's see here. Who wants to volunteer to go first?
I've got a new one that I can talk about.
Joe.
This is actually fresh from today. I tried Gang Beasts.
Yes.
The Ragdolly Gumby fighting simulator. That's out on Steam. And it is fantastic. It is a ton of fun.
Best party game ever.
What are you doing it? So you fight one another?
You gang beasts.
You gang beasts. Yeah, the name should be, which is funny because when someone was talking about it to me, they introduced it as Game Beasts, and Game Beasts almost makes more sense than Gang Beasts, but I didn't have the heart to correct him on the spot. He was very excited about the game. But basically, the idea is that you are all the, you know, each player is kind of this blob, Gumby, ragdoll kind of figure, and the controls
humanoid.
That you have... Humanoid, yeah. the controls that you have are very directly tied to... your individual limbs. So you can run around and then you can grab with your right hand, grab with your left hand. There's one button to raise both hands above your head. And then there's another button dedicated to headbutting. and the entire, and you know, you can grab onto anything in the environment, namely other players. And the entirety of the game is trying to knock the other players down with your headbutt and you're running around, grab them, lift them over your head, and then throw them off something high to take them out. but since it's all so ragdoll driven, and since the controls are so awkward, it basically looks like a bunch of inflatable balloon animals humping each other.
It's like my nightmares then.
Sold.
Yeah, but it's so much fun. And there's this kind of this There was definitely an element of skill to it, because the people that I was playing with had done it several sessions before and kind of clearly had the edge over me. But I'm horrible at fighting games to begin with. And there were several rounds where I kind of came out ahead just through being able to flop around slightly more effectively than the game. I can't even say fight better. Like, you just kind of waddle in their direction and hope things turn out for you.
Well, at least, you know, what I'm seeing, like, every fight innately ends up as, like, this Die Hard-esque moment where, like, you're attempting to throw someone over, but they have a hold of your arm and are trying to, like, you know, pull you off the edge of the skyscraper. And
yeah, exactly. And eventually your grip will wear down, but it takes, like, a full minute. So you can just hang there and be like, let go, no.
You're going to run off the clock.
Yes.
You're going to kill us both.
Swat at each other, because it's a great couch co-op game. But it's also super addicting, because this was at work. Someone brought it in and was talking about it, so we played. And I was like, okay, you know, I've got 5 minutes, so I'm just going to hop over, play, and then, you know, go back. And like that, it was 20 minutes later. The rounds don't take long at all. Like, you know, everyone starts with 3 lives, and, you know, when you fall to your death, you lose a life. So that, you know, that takes maybe a minute tops per round. And so, to lose a life. And so a full round takes like 3 minutes.
Hmm.
That didn't make sense. For either everyone to fall to their deaths, or to have only one person standing and then things reset, takes about a minute.
Okay.
So then a full game takes about 3 minutes.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that it's super fun. I look forward to opportunities to play it again.
Nice. Do you just have this set up, like, at work, do you have like a dedicated gaming PC that people are like, yeah, let's hang out?
We do, although the person just had on their Mac and they took it off to the conference room, and we played it. There are Xbox controllers in the office that we kind of stole and plugged into that. So it was good times.
Gang beasts,
yeah. It's so hard to say, right? I feel like that's one of those kind of like mush soup titles.
No. Going from a G, especially if you're enunciating, to a B is really hard, because you're going from the back of your mouth to the front of your mouth. So it's gang, and then your tongue has to like rush up to your teeth to get beast. Yeah,
I'm behind.
I kind of like just gang beast.
Yeah.
The trailer looks really amazing. It's amazing, like, how violent you can make it, as long as it's, like, pretty in tone, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a level that you do fighting on top of 2 trucks headed down the roadway, and eventually there are signs that they go under, and you can just kind of pick someone up and hold them up and let the sign take them out. But you have to let go at the right moment, otherwise you get...
Oh, yeah, that pull, yeah, yeah.
I think my favorite level that I've done is the window washer one.
Oh, the one that's in elevators?
Huh?
Is it the one that's in elevators?
There's one where it's like the like things that they lower. There's 2 of the things that you lower down on like the side of a skyscraper to scrub the windows.
Okay, yeah.
And you can either throw people off, or you can also like break the lines. So like half the matches end with just like the lines getting broken and everyone falling to their death.
Yeah, I don't think I played that one, but there's a similar one with 2 elevators next to each other that has that same ethos.
And you can hold on to the wire after you drop the elevator.
Exactly. Although it's kind of hard to tell when you're trying to break the wire which piece of it you're holding on to. So half the time you break it and you're holding on to the wire that just plummets you to your death.
So it's Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it really. Yes, that is a great way to describe it.
So it's Russian elevators.
Yeah. And I've been playing more Danganronpa 2. I haven't gotten to the first murder yet. It's all still like set up.
Oh wow, you're really not that far.
No,
is not a week's worth of progress, Dennis. Come on.
No.
I'm stepping up my game. You can at least maintain yours.
That's true.
You get weak Furia.
Bad chilling.
I'm getting Phoenix Furia. I'm really savoring every moment. But yeah, so I've like I said, I've got it on my nightstand, so I'll play it for a bit before I go to bed.
Are any of the characters sticking out to you?
I really like the mechanic character.
Oh yeah, purple hair make sharp teeth.
Yeah, exactly. and I think
I really hope that's actually their name.
No, I forget his name because Japanese names don't stick in my mind. Yeah, unfortunately.
The ones from the first game did for me, but I'm not far enough in the second game for it to take hold.
It took a while for the ones in the first game to stick hold as well, or to take hold as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if I could go back and name him now that I've got some distance. But so he, just because he's got such a bright color palette, that sticks out to me. And it made me realize that the rest of the color palettes, in large part, are pretty drab in both the first and the second game.
Really, I thought that the second one was like kind of borderline like Miami Vice.
for the locations, yes, at least much more so than the first game. Mm-hmm. For the characters, not as much. Like you've got the mechanic, the ultimate mechanic, but even then, like the ultimate hamster breeder. Which is a thing. he's got like a purple scarf, but still dresses kind of drab. The master swordsman is all in black. Yeah. Just there's not a ton of bright colors.
Yeah. I really hope you eventually get to a murder where someone just gets sworded to death.
I guarantee you that will play in some way.
That's not even a spoiler. Like,
yeah, if there's a master swordsman above the mantle in Act One,
Chekhov's swordsman.
Yeah.
If.
But yeah, so not much to report on that. Still enjoying it though.
Cool.
And that's me.
Nice. Let's see here, David. How about you?
Sure. I've actually been. I picked up Saints Row 4 again. So I played it a little bit, I think actually predominantly, when it periodically, had free weekends on Steam, and sort of bounced off of it. I think just, I played, 3-2-2 recently, so it was a little too samey, but, I picked up on the winter sale or whatever, and I am really, really enjoying it.
Yeah. So to differentiate this from 3, 4 is the one where you are running around with crackdown powers inside of a computer simulation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I think a lot of it is, I feel like it's sort of coming back to it and... like, you know, having spent like, you know, like $10 on it or whatever, it was very much, I didn't care how I played it, if that makes sense. So I did much more just like whatever, if I felt like doing something, doing it. So, in particular, I really like, I feel like the weapons, they do a really good job of, you know, providing you some cool weapons to play with. I before each fight, I feel like I'm some like I don't know, the uber violent equivalent of some like rich guy out golfing. Like, yes, I believe today I will use the shotgun. Bring me the pump action, Jeeves.
I just like the idea of a caddy for weapons.
Yeah, the weapon caddy.
You're downrange on this one, and the wind is high. So
I'm pretty sure that was probably a thing, like in a Hot Shots movie or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure.
But yeah, I don't know for sure. It just seems like something that would happen.
Yeah. So it's very much like I'll do like, oh, this fight I'm going to see if I can just use like this superpower, or in particular they really double down on they give you a lot of alien weapons that are just completely over the top.
Yeah, like energy weapon kind of things.
Yeah, energy weapons. There's a one of the most fun is there's a abduction gun. That basically you charge it up, you know, on like an area, and you know the stereotypical UFO beam comes up and like, you know, abducts all the enemies that pass through there.
Nice.
But the funny thing is, like, the actual effect of it is to, like, lift them really, really high up in the air. And, regular enemies, if, if you throw them up high enough that they would obviously fall damage, the game will just, like, kill them and, remove them. So yeah. That's kind of how they programmed it.
Mm-hmm.
But the end effect of that means that, like, if you get caught in the blast or if you use our boss, it just, like, rockets you just crazy, crazy high up in the air. And, like, there's no fall damage for you. So it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of silly.
It's a fun gun.
Yeah. And the whole thing is really well written. I feel like even compared to the previous one, they really, really double down on the character interactions and mission lines that focus on the various secondary characters' motivations and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like explicitly cribbing from Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
In that regard, which I really appreciated when I played it.
Yes. Also in the option to perhaps inappropriately attempt to romance all of your crew.
Any and all of them. Like, is my character walking up to Kinsey and then with Nolan Nurse voice, "Hey, Kinsey, wanna fuck?"
Yeah. I think my favorite pickup for Why the Others is I'm looking for rough sex and Kinsey fucking terrifies me.
I forget. Can you romance Keith David?
You can't.
Damn it.
But it's so, a number of them you can't, and usually those are even better.
Yeah. I just like the idea of rating sex by Kinsey's. Like, how was it? Well, I'd give it 2 Kinsey's.
As though there is some kind of Kinsey scale.
Yes.
But a bunch. Yes. So, I don't know. Another highlight, like, for me, I really enjoy the kind of the main big bad, the alien overlord.
Zinyak or whatever.
Has some, like, overall
I can remember, like, an alien name but not Japanese people's names. It's Kazuichi Soda is the name of the mechanic from Danganronpa 2. I just want to make sure that I that I at least call myself out on that. Continue, but, sorry.
Overall, he kind of just says, like, the generic, your alien overlord, but just has some really good, like, I like their take on, like, the alien doesn't, like, understand human culture. Because they do a lot of jokes based on that, but being Saints Row, it's much more over the top. So, like, I think one of my favorites is, you know, why they do the whole, like, you're suddenly inside a retro video game. And it's like, you know, adventure game, and you go into a room and there's, you know, a pendulum blade over a pit, and, you know, a skeleton partially bricked up in a wall, and a raven, and he... Behold, humanity's greatest fears, as illustrated by Edgar Allan Poe. I love that kind of take on of not so much the, like, oh, aliens don't understand human nature, but more just like...
Well, he's like a pop culture junkie. And,
right,
and
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I love that the last straw for Pierce and Shandy or whatever, you're driving around as a crew and you're singing along to Biz Markie, like, you got what I need. And yeah. And then Zinyak cuts in and starts doing his own, and that's the last straw, because you do not mess with a Biz Markie sing along. Yeah. That was a funny joke in that game I played 3 years ago.
That's like 90% of this episode of this podcast.
Yep. Continue.
Yeah. So that's actually the main of it. Although, are we going to talk at all about, like, the actual playing of Phoenix Furia?
We can here. We kind of brushed over it in the interview.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, in the interview, we don't actually talk about, like, the core gameplay all that much. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe once we get to Des, we can tag team that.
Yeah.
Flappy Meat. We covered it.
Flappy Meat. There we go.
Well, that doesn't sound like, you know.
No, that is a terrible phrase that I hope we never say again. huh. So, yeah, let's see here. Ben, how about you?
So I got two pretty good ones. One continuing from last week, still playing it Until Dawn. I've gotten to pretty scary part. So.
Oh, it pooked you?
Well, I mean, I'll keep playing it. But, like, so they call, like, the choice system in the game the butterfly effect.
Okay.
To make it sound cool. But
your butterflies came home to roost?
Think about it.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that they do is they forecast some of the choices that you make. And so on one of the menu screens, there's, I think, something like maybe 20 different butterflies. And, like, there will be a title for it, like Man's Best Friend or, like, Who Gets the Gun or something like that. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the actual event, you'll be like, oh, okay, this is what they're talking about. And I have a choice and I can do one thing or another. And so it'll record what choice you made. And, like, it'll be like a dot, dot, dot sort of thing. And then eventually it'll say what the payoff is of it, of, like, then this person did this because of what you've done. So the next one that I'm coming up to is called Runner Hide. And I'm in a particular point of the game where I think something very bad is going to happen to one of the characters. And so I'm slow playing that one a little bit.
Is this a character that you have attachment to?
No, not really. Just, you know, I mean, any character you play as, I guess you don't want to see brutally murdered by something that might be scary. But
so that's weird because well, I mean, it might be satisfying too. I mean, like, look at the end of Hostel 2. No, I'm serious. But, like, so that's funny because there are, like, three ways that could be upsetting. Either, like, in the I'm playing a video game and I lost sense, in the I don't want to see somebody die sense because it's going to be gross and that is scary by default, or like, I don't want to see this because, like, I've actually gotten invested in this character.
It's not the third one.
So it's somewhere between one and two.
Yeah, because all the characters are kind of like almost borderline jokes almost, because they're all like very archetypical high school students, you know? And so, like, none of them you take too seriously, but they have shown so far that they are not afraid to show a lot of gore in the cutscenes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But it's fun. I will continue playing it. I'll probably see it through to the end. I have some good ideas of what I think the twist will be in the game, if there is a twist.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if that happens. Other game I want to talk about that I'm really excited about is I got The Witness today, which came out today.
Oh shit, yeah, I got The Witness too. Tag team, bro.
Alright, so I'm like maybe an hour into it or so.
I played for like a half hour. I was gonna punt on talking about it, so I will let you give the primer.
I thought about it when I first started playing it. It's like a love child between Myst and something else, but I forget what the something else is. like pathfinding, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I guess I wasn't completely clear on what the mechanic of the game was before starting it, but it's basically pathfinding. And then there's just subtle little rules about what you need to do with the path, I guess.
So I'm only to the point where there are like three kind of puzzles or complications or whatever.
Okay.
Like, okay, picking the point and like drawing a path from beginning to the end, like no matter what, anything goes, separating the white squares and the black squares, and then having to hit all of the black dots on the path.
And what's great is there's no HUD. They never tell you what these mechanics are. It relies on like the puzzles stepping up and you being able to figure it out.
Yeah. And as you're solving these, like, you're redirecting the flow of energy, at least so far from what I've seen, to like different devices. So like they're, you know, they very slowly introduce these elements in both the macro and micro scale to where you are like trying to follow these things and open up doors and stuff.
Did you get a Myst vibe from it when you played it?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like just like what you said about like, oh, you're on this island and there really is no guide for you. Like Myst had Atrus telling you about this thing and you had like a note, but like really it was mostly you figuring stuff out yourself. That and kind of like the solitude and mystery and the fact that it's gorgeous. I really think this game looks good. Do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily in a super realistic way, right? Like it's stylish.
It's stylized.
It's very bright and colorful, at least what I've seen so far. I'm going to be curious if they play with that dynamic range a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is super pretty. It's,
Have you been like tripped up on anything so far?
Yes, there are two puzzles that I didn't see the immediate solutions to, and it was great. I went out to the store to pick up food, and so I was thinking in particular about the one puzzle for a really long time and couldn't figure it out. Got back and I figured it out after a minute or two, and so it was so satisfying. But yeah. No, I'm super excited to continue playing this because I think that's the big draw is like similar to Braid, like Jonathan Blow is a really good puzzle maker and he's really good at not repeating puzzles and he's really good at stepping you up and making you have to figure out what to do. So
So
I'm definitely looking forward to it. One of the things I was thinking about when playing it is like, oh man, I feel really bad for like if like a 4 or 5 year old comes and plays this game because there's no way they're gonna get that. But I don't know like, if I'm being very pessimistic, but yeah.
I mean, so it felt like I made note of how he was like introducing stuff because you start out with the simplest possible path, like here you have the start and then the end, and then like oh there are no rules, just finish this out, and then just like it's very slowly introducing that stuff. I'm curious about what the point would be where somebody would lose patience with it.
I don't know, so far what I've seen is, you know, he'll give you two puzzles to make sure you get a pattern and you can at least do something. And then the third one might be a twist where it's like, it's the third one will be a lateral puzzle, right? Yeah. So it's like, okay, you see the pattern, you can do this. So now figure this out. There's something different about this one. So.
Yeah. And then he also did something that I thought was pretty cool, at least in the start. Like I walked past this door that had a whole bunch of different kind of like tricks on it. Like it had the dots you had to pass through and it had the white and black separation. And I was like, oh, like I think I maybe know what I need to do, but I'm not quite sure. Like, am I supposed to avoid the dots? Am I supposed to hit all of the dots? Like, well, like what's supposed to happen then right beyond that are there like these series of like teaching panels that you have to hit, but you have to, no, I do not want you to wake up phone. There are these panels that that'll like walk you through what each of those two different elements are. And then,
so were you able to open up the white door?
No. I had to stop and work on podcast stuff before, you know, like between when I went through those teaching panels.
Okay. Yeah. I went back to it. I still couldn't figure it out. Cause there's like three different endpoints that you have to go to, but you're only controlling one line at a time. So,
So it's like, you have to pick the right one. Like I can see, like there are some of them that have multiple starting points that you have to pick from. And I can like, and then that obviously has an effect. So I wonder if adding multiple endpoints makes it so that all of a sudden you have to choose where you begin and end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the only other like small Easter egg I found is when you leave that first castle that you're in, if you go around, there's like a back door or something and you can like walk around the castle, but I didn't find anything. There's like one puzzle there, but there's nothing beyond that.
Right.
So I don't know if it's just like a completionist sort of thing or what.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious to see how this game like zooms out.
Yeah,
that's a good way to put it.
How it catamaries.
bit. Yeah. You know, because like you start in this tiny little room, like to get out of this cell almost and get into the tunnel. You have to solve this puzzle, and then, you know, like everything just kind of gets bigger. And he did awesome stuff where like if the next size up of puzzle wasn't just in plain view, you would like round a corner to look at it. And you'd be like, oh wow, okay. Like this is
teach you to follow the cords on the ground, though.
It's kind of like as you, and then you look up at it, like, oh, huh, okay, I can see that.
Hey, there's a thing all of a sudden.
But it's weird how it's completely, so it's as right now it's completely tied to one puzzle mechanic, which is just pathfinding. So it's kind of bizarre that it's like playing a maze when you're a kid. You know what I mean? But
yeah what else?
Those are the only two I got. I'm definitely going to be playing The Witness. I think that'll probably, I'm going to jump over to that, I think, for sure.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Cool. So I have, I'm going to finish up one, and then I've got another one that's very brief that I can't say much about. I'm going to encourage people to play the Magic Circle.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'll remember I spoke about this, last week. This is the game that's like the first person exploration game where you are playing in this video game, this in-text video game that is kind of like halfway developed, that is being developed by this kind of megalomaniac guy who is voiced by Dr. Venture. kind of the dysfunctional team that kind of surrounds it, and you are going through, like, the mechanic is you get to reprogram these enemies to have different behaviors. You're going around collecting stuff. The game's smaller than I expected it to be. I knew that it was going to be about, you know, 5 hours or so, but like once you get to the overworld, it's just a big series of puzzles that you have to solve that kind of have some dependencies, but your kind of voice in your ear says, yeah, it really doesn't matter how sloppy you are, because the pursuit of perfection is why we're in this situation in the first place. Like, that's why this game isn't being finished. They do cool stuff with the swapping around of abilities. Like, you really kind of break a plane with it, and it starts being really satisfying to, like, monkey around with this. And there are different kind of combinations that you can pick up with abilities that I didn't even know, like, what to do with, like, you know, like mind swapping and teleporting and stuff. But you know, it ultimately ushers you through to use those to kind of solve these big main problems as you go to kill the Sky Bastards, which is what your ally calls the camera avatars of the of the developers and stuff. And this is where I have to start talking in very kind of vague terms, because I don't want to be overly sensitive about spoilers, but I want to, you know, go in and say that the climax of the game, like what everything kind of builds up to, the speech and the performance that go into it are really, really affecting and kind of tie everything together and make this a really good companion piece. You remember when I talked about the Beginner's Guide?
Yeah,
it makes it a really good companion to the Beginner's Guide, and we talked about this on Duckfeed Live. It's going to be coming out here pretty soon, but like, just this whole notion of what is the relationship between a creator and their fans, quote unquote, and the different ways that that can go really, really wrong, and the expectations that are put on, you know, people who make things, you know, especially like this incredibly flawed person who just doesn't have it in him anymore because his light has gone out, and what happens when everything kind of turns on him. It's tremendously affecting. It was a real kind of gut punch, because it was simultaneously, you know, very pathetic in the dramatic sense, like, oh man, I feel for this guy. But also like, oh, you know, you're just digging yourself a hole here, buddy. Like, and then the falling action for this kind of takes the whole, you are redesigning this game, from the inside out idea to its logical conclusion, and mixes that with the overall theme of like, how are people's works reacted to in a really satisfying way. That makes this like, oh my gosh, like totally one of my favorite games come out in like 2015. Like, it is up there with the Beginner's Guide and Her Story.
Hmm. Yeah. Very cool.
Any questions about the Magic Circle?
I added it to my wish list.
Yeah. It's and you have the PC to run it now. That's so cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. I want to talk about Pony Island.
Oh, that looks good.
Oh, really?
Tell us about Pony Island, Cole.
Yeah. So the title is the joke, but there's more behind it. The idea is that you are this person who wakes up in an arcade, and you walk up to a machine that plays this game called Pony Island. This is like a monochromatic game where you are a pony and you jump over these hurdles, except this is a machine that is possessed by the devil, and it's asking you to give it your soul. So there's a way that this could go where it would be like the seventh seal. Like, oh, you're playing a game against the devil. And
what, a game of Pony Island against the devil.
Yep. But it ends up being this kind of ever evolving, kind of like changing format. This ever evolving fight between you and the devil that changes format as he updates the game to try and best you. And, and as you hack into the game with this weird little like, kind of logic puzzle, kind of thing where you're rearranging these tiles and redirecting the flow of these little icons, you know, in order to like manipulate variables and make stuff work for you. And these puzzles get pretty tricky. But yeah, this kind of changes graphics and things. Like, it's very Frog Fractions, except less subversive, because it really, its effectiveness is kind of like The Exorcist, insofar as it really depends on how much, the idea of a Christian devil in hell, like, scares you. So it's kind of like, okay, yeah, like, here this is, and the devil in this is portrayed as this, you know, petulant little child who is just kind of like, oh man, just I'm gonna get you kind of guy. And there are some nice, really effective, like, twists and turns that are, you know, borderline Eternal Darkness style, you know, gags that they pull. But yeah, I appreciated it. I liked it. I spoke a lot of sugar about it in the Slack. I think that it is totally worth playing for the 2 hours and $5 it's going to require of you, if only because, like, more stuff like Frog Fractions is pretty cool. But I, the more I think about it, like, the more the kind of the overall kind of like assemblage of the thing doesn't work for me as much as what it's trying to be, you know?
Yeah.
Just can't recapture that Frog Fractions magic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, part of the magic of Frog Fractions is not knowing that it's Frog Fractions.
Yep, and part of the magic of Frog Fractions too is we do not know what Frog Fractions 2 is. Yeah. So yeah. Any questions about Pony Island?
It looks really cool.
Oh yeah.
So you've already beaten it, right?
Yeah, it is. It is a 2-beer game.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not discourage anybody from playing it. Like, the thematic stuff, you know, your mileage is going to vary. I think that the way that the game evolves to kind of, like, match you is really clever. And I'm spoiling shit by saying that it evolves to match you, but, like, it's so hard to tell because, like, even that one twist, like, okay, if they wanted to go full Frog Fractions with this, they would put it up in a place where, like, this looks like it is an educational game or it is a game for kids. And then the veneer lifts off as, you know, as you realize, like, oh, there's something weird here. But by the virtue of the fact that it has to be on Steam because this person wisely decided to want to make money off of it, like...
Very prudent of them.
Yeah, they can't just say, hey, this is a game called Pony Island and it's rated for everybody, because you're going to get a bunch of little kids who want to play a game about ponies on an island chasing off butterflies. Like, and you're also not going to get the people who are looking to get the kind of, like, fucked up thing that it actually serves you. Right. But like, because that is kind of the leading narrative, that there is a twist to this is a thing. It's hard for me to tell, like, to tell where the line is, like, what is actually, like, off limits. I'm not gonna say the exact ways that it tries to trick you, because I really think if you're expecting those to happen, it's gonna take away some of the punch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a very strange situation, because it has to advertise itself somewhat truthfully, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. That's where you need, like, some kind of service that's like, just go play X, and it tells you nothing more about it. I don't know quite how you do that, though.
Yeah.
That could be tough.
Yeah. I would still encourage everybody to play it. Like, they go to lengths to make it, playable. It's one of those weird games that, like, definitely requires a mouse, though, and they very wisely... Mm-hmm. I'm saying the word wisely a lot. I'm sorry. They very prudently at the front say, like, yeah, you should probably play this with the mouse because it requires some precision, which makes total sense. But yeah.
Very cool.
You guys want to button it up?
Yeah, I think we're good to go.
Cool.
Sweet.
And that was level 136. We would like to thank Eduardo again for stopping by. Check out the show notes for a link to the page for Phoenix Furia, and yeah, I don't really know of any other, like, call to action stuff. Duckfeed.tv, PO Box 27105, Cincinnati, Ohio 45227 is a cool place to send postcards and stuff from your travels. And then also iTunes ratings, reviews, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon, tell a friend. Yeah, sorry,
Amazon
guys.
Amazon link.
Yep. Duckfeed.tv/tipjar. People killed it over the holidays.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, guys. Nice. I'm running out of steam.
Well, let's get you home.
Yeah, let's do this. So I've been Cole Ross @ Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia @dfuria on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on the Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for a title. All right, so we've got a lot of titles here. At least I have plenty. Does anybody have one they want to submit?
Did not have a pen within reach.
I had one, okay. Although this might need to be cut down, but it's better to have a cookie than an achievement.
Okay. This is very true. There was one that you said it early on. You've probably got it written down. Excuse me. And I've forgotten it, so that's unfortunate. But
yeah. Phoenix Fury is an option, of course.
True. So here are the ones that I've got. Doppelgamer.
There it is. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
That was
it would
mine.
Be. The hook was real catchy. It's the Me Show. Russian Elevators. Chekhov's Swordsman. Bring Me the Pump Action, Jeeves. That sounds like a vote of confidence.
Yeah.
Bring Me the Pump Action, Jeeves.
I like that one.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go because I have more work to do.
Yeah. More sucks. Pod work or more work work?
Yeah. Little column A, little column B.
Ugh. Godspeed. That sucks.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Have a good week.
All right. Yeah. You too.
Have later. A good night, guys.
You too. Bye.
Peace.